On the day that President Trump was inaugurated, we watched as thousands protested while most blocked streets carried signs, most of which were later left in the street for city sanitation crews to clean up and voice their objections. There were some who thought it would be just a brilliant idea to commit acts of violence. Those 230 or so were arrested. And as far as the media coverage went, that was the end of that story. Well, it's not that way for the arrested protesters. Joining us now is an attorney to give a legal look at what's waiting for these 230 individuals when they go to court. While being recognized as one of the top 10 attorneys in San Diego, she is also an author whose books include Red Flags, How to Spot Frenemies, Underminers, and Other Toxic People in Every Area of Your Life. Wendy Patrick, thanks for being here today, Wendy.
Thanks for having me.
And Wendy's website, wendypatrickphd.com. So, Wendy, when is it exactly a good idea to bring a crowbar with you to a protest? What were some of these people thinking?
Well, some of them weren't. And, you know, things get out of control very quickly when you've got mobs forming. That's not the intention of most people that go out there and protest. And even the term protest, some say, doesn't fit. I mean, think of it when we use the term marching, okay? We are going to have the March for Life begin today very shortly. We had the Women's March last weekend. Americans are out there getting their steps, standing up for the things that they believe in. That's very different than rioting. When you mention crowbars, smashing windows, vandalism, personal injury, that's not protesting, that's not marching, that's rioting. And that's where the line is drawn legally between what people are able to go out and do, enjoying the First Amendment protection we all have, and going out and causing damage to injury, to property, and getting charged with felonies.
This is what Samantha Miller, she's an organizer with Disrupt J20 Collective, one of the protest organizers, said. These charges, which we'll get into here, are absolutely horrifying. They're just trying to stop any resistance to the Trump administration. Many of these demonstrators were showing rage and fear of what's coming. It's going to take a lot more than asking nicely to create change and stop threats from the Trump administration. This on top of you had Madonna, you referenced the Women's March, saying how she dreams about blowing up the White House.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that her comments went viral, and it actually probably detracted from the message that she was trying to give. You know, one of the things we talk a lot about is threat assessment, and, you know, the fact that it was Madonna probably saved her from what could have been dire consequences had somebody else said it. Nobody took her seriously, but the fact that she said it at all really detracted from what she was trying to get across. And I'm sure she thinks that, too, in retrospect. I mean, she came back with comments saying she didn't mean it. It was taken out of context. But those types of statements are not the kinds of statements that we normally would expect to accompany legitimate marching people that have legitimate views. I mean, obviously people disagree, but it's the manner in which that disagreement is voiced, and it's the actions that accompany that disagreement that often speak louder than the words themselves.
And there is a flip side, too. There have been tweets that have been looked at as threatening that the Secret Service is responding to, so be careful what you tweet in rage, because that could come with a price as well.
Absolutely. You know, words matter as well. And depending on what kind of tweets that Secret Service is following, you know, they take everything seriously. In threat assessment, we often talk about hunters and howlers. In other words, those that you don't see coming that really do have an attack, and those that are very loud about what they're going to do but don't do anything. The problem is we never can distinguish the two from each other as well as we'd like. So we've got to take all of those threats seriously. And you're right, Secret Service and law enforcement in general have their hands full responding to everybody that's on social media. And really, there's more people using that platform every day. I was doing a news hit this morning where I was talking about it's almost ironic that we're talking about marches, because for all the people that think we only speak on social media, Americans still speak in the streets, voicing their opinion in the ways that we've been doing for hundreds of years. We're going to see that with the March for Life today.
With attorney Wendy Patrick, who is also author of books including Red Flags, How to Spot Frenemies, Underminers, and Other Toxic People in Every Area of Your Life. WendyPatrickPhD.com is her website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So getting back to those 230 misguided individuals who showed up with the crowbars and thought healing the world means breaking Starbucks windows and burning limos, they're facing felony rioting charges. What does that mean?
That's right. Well, the D.C. law that defines felony rioting, it's a group of at least five people who, and this is the language, by tumultuous and violent conduct and the threat thereof, whether they cause serious bodily harm or property damage over $5,000. Those are the people that meet the statute. Now, there were a lot of people rounded up in that arrest, and what they're going to have to prove, right, that's got to be a group of five or more. But when you look at the kinds of laws like this that are enforced, this is not police just rounding up everybody in a certain area. It's people that appear to be violating this law. Now, that's got to be proven. Remember, allegations are not proof. There's got to be evidence behind it. These cases will be progressing. Although, I got to tell you, there are lots of cases that are charged that involve plea bargaining and involve people pleading to whether it's what they've been charged with or something lesser, and maybe sentences are fashioned. So we don't get to see the actual in-court presentation of evidence of every single thing that somebody is charged with. The reason these charges are significant is, remember, we are coming off of a couple of years of rioting and looting where lots of people that committed these crimes were never rounded up and arrested. Now, that's likely due to police not being able to identify them and find them. But if we live in a day and age where this is happening more and more frequently, there's got to be consequences for their actions. There got to be consequences for endangering the health and safety of peaceful protesters.
One of the points of argument is a lot of phones and cameras have been taken into custody because obviously they contain evidence, as we've seen by what people, some of the protesters in particular, post on their social media pages of them in the act of some of these criminal actions. That certainly is evidence. It's not like in the old days where police can go to someone and with the camera and say, give me the film from the camera, here's your camera back, and we'll reimburse you for the film.
That's right. And, you know, right now it's phones and cameras, but, I mean, more and more people are wearing GoPros. I mean, there's so much electronic. And remember the whole Google Glass controversy a couple of years ago? There are so many ways of documenting in real time what you're doing, what you're seeing, what's going on around you, that you've got to understand that law enforcement is going to confiscate the equipment, because that's one of the best ways to show what really happened. And that can be both incriminating and exculpatory, depending on what's on the footage. And I know the argument, you know, you obviously got to have a larger context. But in a case like this, when you have so many people rounded up and arrested, you got to believe that there's going to be an awful lot of footage, not only from those that are arrested, but also from others that were filming in the area, that law enforcement agencies are going to use to sort out exactly what happened and exactly who did what.
In particular, there were six police officers injured, and they probably want to do the best they can to try to determine if they can figure out any one or more people who committed those injuries.
That's right. And, you know, the ultimate goal is public safety here. I mean, everybody wants to be able to attend a peaceful protest. Law enforcement agents, they want to be able to protect the people that are protesting, protecting their right to protest without getting shot like they were in Dallas last year, if you remember that, or injured as what happened at the inauguration. Everybody wants to be able to either do their job or respectively voice their concerns in a fashion that keeps everybody safe.
Having our time with attorney Wendy Patrick, also author of books including Red Flags, How to Spot Frenemies, Underminers, and Other Toxic People in Every Area of Your Life. WendyPatrickPhD.com is her website. Then you're listening to Issues and Ideas. In cases like this, given what the actions were of the protesters, as an attorney and on the prosecuting side, hypothetically, what should a prosecutor's concerns be about, and we see it more and more these days, the activist judge who might sympathize with the protesters?
Well, you know, we really are optimistic. We, the legal community, we try to really, you know, be optimistic about judges being independent and exercising independent discretion, especially in cases that have a lot of public scrutiny. You know, judges are not there to legislate from the bench. They're not supposed to be activists. And I know there, you know, you take 1,000 judges, there might be one or two that have complaints against them for exactly what you're describing. But on the whole, we really try to approach these cases in a manner that, you know, both sides have to prove whatever side they're on, and really try not to adversely and negatively assume that a judge is not going to listen to the arguments that's going to make a political decision. Because remember, you know, state court judges can have lawyers run against them. There can be, you know, they can be reprimanded by the if they violate the code of judicial conduct. There are stops and there are checks and balances even for our judiciary. But that is something that is being, publicized more and more, because let's face it, we live in a social media society where an adverse court ruling can go viral instantaneously. Now the court of law is being judged in a court of public opinion. It's counterintuitive, but that's the world in which we live. So you got to know that's on the mind of every jurist. And they're, no doubt, I want to believe they're doing the best they can to remain neutral.
She's been recognized by a variety of sources as one of the top 10 attorneys in San Diego. Learn more about her work and her writing at WendyPatrickPhD.com. Wendy, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.